This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, and we are here with an exciting ranking episode, our favorite activity.
Yeah. Yeah, but I do want to start with an editorial note on our on our pop culture roundup.
Okay,
on our Taylor Swift summary.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to, like, I feel like I have so much to say about this, and I want it to be said that I find Taylor Swift's culling of friends fascinating, and her lineup of who was invited and who wasn't, which we talked about, is forever going to be impressed upon me. But I have seen more of, like, okay, why are we inviting these MAGA heads? And I just want to say I'm disappointed. Okay.
Okay.
Just let the record show.
Okay.
Because I don't want anyone to listen to that and be like, wow, Shelby didn't go hard on this girl. She's still up Taylor Swift's
ASS. Wait, and who were the MAGA people that got invited?
There's someone who runs an ICE detention center who's like the father of a friend of Travis's. But it's like, if you're not giving Emma Stone a plus one, but you're giving the plus one to your friend's father, who also is like literally running...
Do we know that Emma Stone didn't
get
a plus
went,
one?
She arrived and left without a husband.
Okay.
But obviously,
I don't
want to
go.
Yeah, he might not have wanted to go. Hashtag respect.
I'm like, okay.
I also am like waiting for the shoe to drop on if it was tacky inside or if it was a fun party because.
Well, right, yes.
Because that still seems up in the air because obviously there's all this like hearsay currently. Mm-hmm. So the jury is still out on if this was a successful party, you know, separate from identity and billionaire status.
Yes.
And that's what I'm most curious about, that and the dress. So
okay,
thank you for holding space for me to both dislike immense shows of wealth while also still having that girly pop girl inside of me who just wants pretty dresses and pretty things to look at. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Noted. Well, thank you for that sort of referendum.
Thank you.
On Tuesday's episode. Glad that we got that out of the way. Does anyone
and now
else
we can continue.
Have any airing of grievances that they would like to sort of put forward? No? No? Okay. We're okay. With that. Okay. Perfect. Great.
Good.
Thank
all
you.
Good.
So, for today's episode, we will be discussing our top 10 movies of 2026 so far, which we do every year. Mm-hmm. Some years, I feel like we're really on the same page. Some years, we have a lot of different things. I think the last couple of years, though, we've had really strong contenders that have come out in the first half of the year. Not that we haven't this year, but like with Sinners or Everything Everywhere All at Once or Challengers, it was just like so obvious that those were going to be like our favorite movies. And then... Yeah. And then those sort of just held through the entire year. I don't think that is the case this year. I think, like, when I was looking through what we had watched, I'm sort of like, okay, there were things that I liked, things that I liked a lot, but nothing that quite, like, hit that, like, higher echelon of,
right.
Oh, this is a movie that I'm going to be, like, obsessed with for forever. Which I think makes this interesting because... The movies that we're talking about now, we might not end up talking about
ever
again.
Ranking
in the same, like they might be more middle tier movies. So.
Definitely more middle tier. I'm looking at my list and I'm in a panic about it because like the last four, I'm like, did I actually like these or am I misremembering? Do I actually hate these? We'll see.
We'll see.
Next week, I'll have another editorial note that disavows this list I'm about to share.
Well, when you have the Melania documentary on your list.
Yeah, well, that's number one.
Sorry that you guys thought that I was MAGA. I just really liked the documentary.
I just love her hat. Yeah, it's glorious hat. Yeah.
Hats, glorious hats. Would you like to go first?
No.
Or would you like me to go? Okay.
I'd like you to lead the charge on this
okay.
one.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Okay, so starting off strong at number 10, I went with the Pixar movie Hoppers.
Okay, cute.
Which I thought was really well done. It reminded me of sort of old Pixar movies. I thought it had a fresh idea. This is where like the girl goes inside the body of like an animatronic beaver and then like, you know, makes friends with the beaver community and realizes that an evil development company is trying to destroy the animal's home so that they can build condos or whatever.
Correct.
Yeah, it was funny. It was clever. I thought it was had something interesting to say and a clear point of view. I think it's far superior to Toy Story 5, the other Pixar movie that's not coming out this year. That
no.
will not be making an appearance on my list. Yeah, I liked Hoppers. I thought it was good. It does sort of in some ways feel like a movie that at the end of the year is going to be like number 58 on my list. But for now, very solid, very strong. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Okay. That'll come up again. But okay. My number 10, a similarly important animal-led film, is Deep Water, which is directed by Vinnie Harlan, who did Deep Blue Sea, okay? Which, if you remember, Shark Attack movie. Do you remember that with Ice Cube? Did you ever see Deep Blue Sea?
No. Like, this is a genre movie that I don't deal with. That you
okay, well, Deep Blue Sea had Samuel L. Jackson. It was iconic, okay? But the director went on to do whatever else. So this is his return to form. This is his next shark movie. And it stars Aaron Eckhart, and it's a huge ensemble story where the first, like, 40 minutes of the film is just about how this plane crashes into the ocean. And it's honestly like, wow, guys, remember to remove your lithium batteries, okay? Because this, what's about to happen is hell. And it's a bad movie, but it's really fun about it. And it's about these Maki sharks, which are sharks that hunt in groups. So that's important because people are like, this isn't how sharks behave. And I'm like, maybe not, but it's closer than you think, okay? So it's basically you watch these terrible, annoying airplane people get picked off one by one in more and more gruesome ways. And it's really exactly what you want it to be. And I loved it. I hadn't known I needed a shark movie in theaters as desperately as I did, but I loved it. And it was a good time.
Okay.
Also, Aaron Eckhart, what's the deal there? Why isn't he more successful?
I mean, I think Aaron Eckhart is one of those people who, like, is a leading man who never quite hit leading man status.
I know.
And so he's always going to lose out on those roles to, like, Matt Damon and Brad Pitt and, like, that class of people. And so but he's also not really a character actor.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's going to play, like, a gas station worker or something in, like, a big movie. So
it's just gotta be relegated. Brutal that you're that your premiere film is The Dark Knight. Dark Knight Rises. No, Dark Knight.
Dark Knight, yes.
And then you just never take off from there. Ouch.
But like even in Dark Knight, like he's playing the boring character. Like, you know, like he is cast in that role because he is just like a generally nice looking man who's kind of boring.
Yeah. 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 So he's staying in shape. He's fighting off sharks, and it's fine for him.
Good for him. My number 9 is Charlie XCX's The Moment, a movie which I
feel like your list is just going to be me being like, oh, yeah, that's coming up.
oh, well, perfect. I mean, so maybe we agree on more stuff than I thought we did.
Yeah.
The Moment was the mockumentary where Charlie XCX is playing herself and sort of like having a mental breakdown, trying to figure out how to like make this concert film. And I just thought it was really clever. There was a lot of really fun sort of inside baseball moments and a lot of really biting satire. Like, were the performances the best ever? Maybe not. Like, were there moments of the script that were a little rough around the edges? Sure. But I really thought it worked a lot better than it could have. And yeah, there are like scenes of it that I have watched on TikTok now numerous times, like her and Kylie Jenner in the spa, like incredible.
Yeah.
So truly, yeah, that's my number nine.
My number nine is Sheep Detectives.
I was toying with putting that on my list. I really did enjoy that.
Yeah, it's cute. It's fun. We did a whole episode about it, and I bet it's streaming now. So it's like, might as well watch it. The cute little sheep being goofy and dumb and also tackling things like death and purpose. It's beautiful.
It's currently streaming on Amazon Prime Video. So
there we go.
Yes, you can buy more towels and have them sent to your house and also watch this at the same time. Number eight. My number eight is the drama. The Robert Pattinson Zendaya. Okay.
And that'll be coming up again for me.
And that'll be coming up again. Okay, great. I'm glad we're on the same page. This just means that the top of my list is going to be full of movies.
It's going to be completely different.
I hated that. Why do you have that here? The drama, Robert Pattinson, Zendaya, about them planning their wedding and realizing like days before that Zendaya had thought about being a school shooter but actually hadn't gone through with it because somebody else beat her to the punch. It was very clever, very witty. I thought all of the performances, with maybe the exception of Alana Haim, were very good. It's produced a lot of memes, I think, online, which I really appreciate. It feels like it's sticking around in the zeitgeist.
I just don't know what else could be topping these for you. Like, that's what worries me, Matt, is I'm like, okay, what have you been watching that you're like, this
is... Well, the Melania documentary. That's coming up.
Okay. I'll hold off.
Okay. I will say there's a couple things coming that I think you probably haven't seen.
Oh, great. So. Yeah. Okay, of course. Okay, well, my number eight is... Voicemails for Isabel.
Ugh, that was like number 11.
This didn't crack. Okay, so now I do not know what to anticipate because I was like, oh, I bet Matt ranked this high.
I did love that movie.
Okay, yeah. This is the cancer. Well, this is the sister rom-com from Netflix. Cancer sister
rom-com.
Cancer sister, dead cancer sister rom-coms loosely inspired by You've Got Mail, which finds Zoe Dutch, who I found out is a Zionist.
Is she?
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't even know she was Jewish. Her mom is Leah Thompson, who's in like a lot of Christian movies.
Yeah. Well, I know. Yeah. She posted about it early on after the October 7th attack. So maybe she's learned and grown, but she hasn't let the rest of the world know.
Okay. Well.
So that put a sour taste in my mouth. But if you're willing to separate...
If you're not thinking the artist, about the Zionism of it all.
It's actually like a really cute, refreshingly funny, charming rom-com. Where the characters are not the most illogical you usually run into. She's leaving voicemails for said dead cancer sister, and they go literally the day after. They end that phone line quick, and this guy in Texas starts getting them and starts to become enmeshed in her life and before deciding to meet and pursue her without her knowing that he actually has some insider intel. But it was cute. It was sweet. People want to hate on it because she loves ice cream nachos, but it's like, what's your big idea? You know, why not? I think that would really thrive in a place like San Francisco. So.
Yeah. I'm like, I've had dessert nachos places and they're good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what's not to love? They do get a little soupy sometimes, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
My number seven, hot off the presses, a movie that I just saw this weekend, is The Invite. Have you seen The Invite?
No, but I want to.
This is Olivia Wilde's new movie that she directed. I actually don't know if she wrote it, but she directed
it. She did, I think.
And her and Seth Rogen play a married couple who live in an like apartment. I think it's in San Francisco. They live in an apartment, and their upstairs neighbors are Edward Norton and Penelope Cruz. And they invite the pair of them down sort of for like dinner because, you know, they've been neighbors meeting each other in the hall a lot. And they finally, you know, they've been putting off like a dinner, and then, you know, they decide to have it. So the whole movie set in this one apartment. It's just the four of them acting. And it feels a bit like a play because, you know, it's very talky and it's just set in this one space. But it is so funny, and I think all four of the performances are so clever, and watching them sort of navigate each other and both of their individual relationships, but then their relationships with the other couple, and you learn that Penelope Cruz and Edward Norton are swingers and like maybe want to invite Olivia Wilde and Seth Rogen into swinging. It's so well done. And yeah, I was just like on the edge of my seat the whole time. I feel like it's really hard to do that when it's just four people talking in an apartment, but it really worked for me. It was very tight. And I think that the ending is really interesting and sort of provocative. I don't want to give that away, but yeah.
But is it as good as Don't Worry, Darling?
It's actually crazy to me that the same person who made Booksmart, which we both loved, and this also made Don't Worry, Darling in the middle. Because Don't Worry, Darling is so bad, and both of these other movies are so, like, smart and well done. I think that she's just not good. Like, I think that she should just avoid the sort of high
concept.
Yeah,
she can't do the genre
like,
film.
Oh, here's, like, some people navigating interpersonal relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
also
fair.
She's such a good actress, I think, and she really like gives herself a nice, fun, juicy part in this. Seth Rogen's great. Like, yeah, it's really enjoyable. I feel like you would like it.
Okay, yeah, I've been interested. So good to hear it's not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And number also seven. Not terrible. Number seven, I have Mother Mary.
Oh. Okay. Wow. Okay.
Which I just delighted in. Okay. Miss Annie Hathaway is a pop star with good music that I still listen to. Thank you very much.
Great.
And she is going through it and has to revisit a female friendship that has gone awry and that she feels in need to exercise. I liked it because I found it really thought-provoking, and they were so mesmerizing, and it was so strange and weird, but it like struck enough notes of reality for me that I could accept the haunting red sheet. Like I think it's a good time. I think it was clever and fun and thought-provoking.
Yeah, I really did not like that movie.
I know, because you hate women, and it's fine. Yes. We all have our weaknesses.
Yes, exactly.
Our blind spots. Mm-hmm. But you did like the music.
I did like the music, and I have listened to the music a good bit since then. Mm-hmm. So that's a positive. Mm-hmm. I think that the movie just, you know, did not live up to the music, unfortunately. The music was outshining the movie. Rough go. Number six, I have Backrooms.
Oh my gosh, you really did like it that much?
Yeah, did you see
I hated rooms? This film, yeah.
Okay, I was like, did we do an episode on Backrooms?
No.
I don't think we did. No. I loved Backrooms.
You are ridiculous.
Backrooms is such a vibe movie.
Well, so is Mother Mary, just for the record.
That is true, but I was on the level with the vibes of Backrooms. I was not on the level with the vibes of Mother Mary for whatever reason. Backrooms, I thought it was such an interesting portrayal of like the human consciousness and trauma, with the Backrooms being like a good illustration of the way that our minds work and sort of having to explore them and figure out like what is going on and what sort of demon is lurking in the midst of all of these like memory boxes that we have.
Uh-huh. So you think it's just about memory?
I think it's about Yeah, I think it's about memory and about like trauma and therapy and sort of, like sussing through past relationships, because the rooms in back rooms are full of things that are like distorted versions of memories from the characters' lives. Like there's couches and chairs, like things that you see in the outside scenes are then distorted in there. And I'm like, that's kind of what, like, you know, memory is in general. Yeah. Of like, you remember versions of things, but it's not always right. And sometimes it's changed and they're kind of, it's hard to find stuff and you're purposefully like burying certain things and there's dangerous stuff like looking around the corner, but you don't exactly know what and why. And it is, the dangerous things are strange versions of yourself. So
what is the therapist? Why is she getting stuck in it?
Well, I sort of think that like when you're a therapist, your job is sort of like helping somebody excavate their mind. And So to a certain degree, you have to go in there and sort of like, grope around with things. I don't know that there's like a clear one-for-one metaphor, but I liked the energy of it. And I thought the production design was great. I thought it was super scary in moments.
I thought it was goofy.
I was like, I loved the vibes of it. I just like liked all of the weird energy.
Yeah. Okay. So. It's not a controversial take. I think a lot of people agree with you, but I was like, I think what it is for me is I could just feel the like teenage self-importance seeping through the.
I thought it sort of worked in spite of that. Like I could see that, but then I also could sort of see like the things that he want, like the things that I sort of took from the movie, I don't necessarily think were the things that he was trying to say, I think it worked almost in spite of him.
Okay, that's fair. Glad you liked it. I never asked. Now I know. It's just my conscience trying to protect me from your...
Right, exactly. From the pirate version of me that's hanging around your psyche.
Horror. Okay, well, next up for me is Hoppers, which...
Okay.
I was probably more attached to because, one, cute animals. Love a cute animal. Two... Yes. I have a child, so watching her laugh at movies like this also elevates the game. And three, the whole like environmental collapse is always going to be a win for me. eye-catching introduction. And I did like how this didn't end up having like a nefarious villain aside from Dave Franco's butterfly. Manic butterfly, but that people learn to come together and try and protect what they have to share, which is a good message. So that's the most optimistic you'll get me on this list, probably.
Okay.
Well, believing in that.
Exciting. My number five is The Devil Wears Prada 2, which...
Wow.
Did you... This is not on your list?
This has not come up later for me. No, I think we're past that.
Okay. I mean, I think I'm slightly biased just because this is a movie about journalism and that really struck a chord with me. Mm-hmm. I thought a lot about this movie in the last couple of months just because of the, you know, work situation that I'm navigating and working freelance and, you know, people getting laid off. But then at the same time, like, I don't know, like weird corporate stuff going on with like brand deals and whatever. I don't know. It's, I mean, even Taylor Swift's Wedding feels like it could be a plot of this movie somehow or another. Like, I think it's really thought provoking. And I keep thinking about that scene at the end where Meryl Streep is like, ugh, I love working. And I'm like, same. Now somebody just pay me to do it, please. Like, this is what I want. And I thought this movie could have been so bad and it ended up working really well. I like the fashion. It even gave us a good Emily Blunt performance, which, you know, we've seen in other things this year is hard to do. I don't think Disclosure Day is showing up on either of these lists. So
Well, actually, no.
I was like, wow, Shelby, wow. So yes, Devil Wears Prada 2. We also did a whole episode on that. So
I know. I'll
talk more about it.
I know, but I wish I could convince you, but I won't. I'll let you have your love for that.
Okay.
It's fine. Do you think that will be your favorite Annie Hathaway performance in 2026? Final verdict.
I'm very intrigued about The Odyssey because I had the thought yesterday. I was like, oh, we're going to get scenes of her just sitting there like on that loom, you know, sort of like weaving things, but also like crying. So I don't know. I think The Odyssey has a potential. I'm going to hate Verity. We're both going to hate Verity.
Yeah.
And then the end of the dinosaur movie is such a question mark.
It looks good.
Will they release that poster of like her with the gun on the porch?
Yeah.
It's like, oh. Okay,
Annie. Yeah. I'm excited for that one, probably. Okay, number five for me is The Moment, as previously discussed. I think this was just so delightful to watch. Like, it really did feel like the perfect cross-section of all my interests and the sort of my obsession with pop stardom and the parasocial sort of elements and how that would affect them and how they perceive us. I thought it was really smart and fun and interesting that I was just like locked in. It's like such a, like, people didn't like it, and I can see why it didn't work. But for me, it really felt like the perfect kind of postmortem on reaching that sort of zenith of popularity.
And it's very interesting, not to get us on a rabbit hole, like what she's doing now, because she has music fashion film is that what her next album is called?
I don't know.
And so she's doing press for that, but the music that she's released has been good, but it is sort of odd and moving in a different direction. It feels like a lot smaller than Brat. So, and she's been doing all of these movies where she has like cameos that have come out. I'm really intrigued to see where her career goes.
I feel like I've missed, like, I'm not like, I'm still not like a follower, so I don't know. I know her two singles.
A bunch of weird art films where she has like a small movie. Like she was in this film Eruptia. She was in a 100 Days of Hero, 100 Nights of Hero, something like that. She was in like a vampire movie that I didn't see.
What?
Like she's been in a bunch of small strange things, and then she's releasing music. She obviously had Wuthering Heights that came out with that music. Now she has another album that's coming.
And
she had a soundtrack briefly. Rock music. Wink Wink is, I think, the newest song from the album.
I haven't heard it. Is it good?
I like it. I think it's my favorite of the three new songs that she's released. Yeah. But she kind of almost feels like somebody who doesn't really want to be a super famous person.
Yeah.
And so she's like, okay, I did it. I achieved that level of fame with Brat. Like, now I want to go do my like weird small things. She does not feel like she has a lot of drive to like.
Yeah, she's not building on this momentum.
Her level of fame.
Which
I think is interesting.
Yeah. No. Very fascinating.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Number four. Okay. My number four is this movie called Heel, which nobody has watched. For various reasons.
Is it about a dog? Oh, this is the one. This is like the one about the guy kept in a house.
So it came.
Yeah.
I saw it at Toronto Film Festival last year, where it had the title Good Boy. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. the dog horror movie Good Boy also came out this year, or last year. So they had to change it. So they changed the title to Heel. Mm-hmm. The premise of this movie is that there is a like god-awful nightmare of like a 19-year-old British party boy who's just like drinking and doing drugs and like hugging up people, like, just like a terrible human being, like the person you would hate the most.
Yeah.
And he's out partying one night and gets drugged by Stephen Graham, who then brings him to this like house in the country and chains him up in the basement. And so he has like a dog collar on that's connected to the wall. So he's like locked in this basement. And you're seeing it all from the point of view of the boy. So you're kind of not really sure what's going on. You come to find out that Stephen Graham is married to Andrea Riseborough, who is like sort of almost ghostly and wandering around this house. But then they also have a young son who's kind of shy, but like sweet. And over time, the three of them are trying to rehabilitate this 19-year-old in the basement to sort of turn him into a better person. And you're not really sure why. And it sort of seems to be working, but also sort of not. And the 19-year-old is constantly trying to figure out ways to escape. And so it's a really interesting thriller, but it's like oddly heartfelt and sort of emotional at the same time, especially as you get further on and the 19-year-old like gets to know this family and sort of understand what is happening and what their secrets are. I loved it. It came out, I think, like on VOD here in America. Mm-hmm. Nobody has seen it. Nobody watched it. Nobody talked about it. Like, it made no money. But I am obsessed. And I'm kind of like, I don't know why it didn't get more of a push when Stephen Graham's adolescence has won every award. He's been at every award show. Like, it feels like they could have done a better job at promoting this, which I think is actually a really good movie. Like it has an 87% on Rotten Tomatoes, which, you know, strong.
So will you just tell me what happens?
Like right now on the air? I want people to watch it.
Okay, fine. I'll look it up later. Because at the time it came out, there was like a little bit of noise about it when it first came out, but the Wikipedia page didn't update. So I didn't get to read spoilers.
Yeah, I'm like, the Wikipedia page is currently updated with the plot. I'm looking at it now.
Thank you.
It made like barely over $1 million. So not much. But it's not like a scary movie. Like,
no, I know.
That you would.
But I don't think it was accessible. Like it, I don't think it's like, I mean, it might be streaming now, but at the time.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know.
What happened?
Yeah, good boy. Okay, Q. My number four is Send Help.
Oh, yes.
It's Rachel McAdams and not Logan. Which guy is it?
Dylan O'Brien.
Dylan O'Brien. I thought this was so fun and zany and surprising, and I've watched it again with other people, and it's always fun to watch them watch it. And there's just so much like crazy, like when she's like threatening to cut off his dick, like honestly, great stuff, really disgusting body horror stuff. But like Rachel McAdams is doing excellent work here. Her chemistry with Dylan O'Brien is so fun, and it's just bonkers. So I had a good time. I think you did too, but I guess not that much.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know. It didn't like stick with me in the same way. I thought about putting it on the list, like sort of lower down, but then once I actually got to writing stuff down, I realized I didn't think it would make the cut.
Nah, mid.
Mid.
But yeah, that's fair.
Whatever. Okay, number three, another movie that nobody watched or heard about. I feel like you would actually really like this if you watched it. Let me see if it's streaming anywhere. It is available for video on demand for $3. It is a documentary called Natchez.
Natchez?
Yes, like Natchez, Mississippi, like this the town in Mississippi. And it's a documentary about this town, And the thing that is like the town's claim to fame is that it has all of these gigantic like antebellum plantation homes.
Right.
And once a year there is a what is it called? It's not called debutante, but there's once a year there's like a big festival where all of these rich people like open their homes and you can sort of tour through these homes in Natchez.
Okay.
And so the documentary is like follows a bunch of different people in this town during this event. So like these super wealthy, rich white people who are trying to like preserve the heritage of the city, but then also the black people who live in the city and how they're trying to like create memorials for all of the slaves because the city doesn't really want to acknowledge the fact that all of these plantation homes like had all of these slaves in them. Then there's like a black person who bought one of the plantation homes and is like running her own thing. And it's just, it's really interesting to watch all of these different groups interact with each other and how they are all trying to assess this version of history that they have. And one of the guys who owns one of the houses is gay, but his like mother had lived there before him. So it's like, okay, well, if you're gay, then it feels like you should have more of a connection with like black people because you're also a persecuted group, but then you're not. It's just a really fascinating study of this town. But what puts it over the edge is there is a scene in like that they save till the end that is like jaw-dropping in what one of the characters like decides to do. It feels like that moment where like, you know how in the Jinx, like, they left the mic on that guy and then talked about how, like, he killed him or whatever it was? Like, it has that sort of feel to it where you're like, oh my gosh. Like, the fact that they got this on camera is, like, startling. Yeah. Like, it's uncanny. And I was sitting there in the theater just, like, with my mouth agog. But yeah, it's just, it's such a fascinating view of this town. And I think about how, like, we as modern people are grappling with the history of, like, slavery in the South.
Natchez.
Yes. N-A-T-C-H-E-Z. Natchez.
Okay. Well, you did a good job convincing me, Matt.
Okay.
I wanna praise you for that.
It has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes and made $200,000 at the box office.
Good prison.
It was apparently also broadcast on PBS at one point. So
Cute.
Yeah.
I'll save it. I'll maybe spend $3 on it. We'll see.
Yay.
Okay. Well, my top three now is the drama, which... Okay. I loved this movie. I think it helped that I did go in knowing like the twist. So I was prepared for it. And so instead of being like shocked and dismayed, I was like, let's see how this goes. And I really just like loved everything about it. Like how like it, I liked it as a character study. I liked it as a comedy. I liked it as like this bumbling love story. I liked every performance in it, even the most annoying Heim sister, really rocking her annoying Heim sister title. And I think it is just so smart. And it's not like edgy for the sake of being edgy. I think it had something really interesting to say and point out about like how we, especially liberals, will like judge one another based on sort of unproven metrics, like, oh, you think this, therefore you're a bad person and I'm better than you, even though I did something else you can point out as deeply flawed. And so I just really had a good time with this. I can see criticisms about like having a black woman as the lead, but not really interested or invested in the racial angle of it, but I do think Zendaya does an excellent job with being this very specific character here. So I'm excited to see how this movie sticks around in conversations. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time for me.
I mean, I also like this movie. Very good. I already talked about it. I do not, but I'm happy that you put it higher on the list. Love.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. My number two is the movie Exit 8. Did you watch this?
What? No, no, wait. Okay. Exit 8.
This is a Japanese movie.
I did watch this. This is the most insane thing you've said to me this year, probably. Okay.
Wait, continue. You watched this movie, but then you forgot what it was called?
Literally, yes.
Okay. Okay. Okay, great. We're starting off well. Exit 8 is based on a video game where this man is trapped in a loop of a subway station in Japan. Mm-hmm. And when you play the video game, you walk down this hallway, and if there's any anomalies or sort of spot the difference kind of things happening, you turn around and you go backwards. If there isn't any anomalies, then you walk forward and you complete the loop. And you have to go through 8 times in a row correctly guessing whether or not there's an anomaly. And if you get it wrong, then it resets and you go back to 0. Mm-hmm. So that's how the video game works. That's basically also how the movie works, where you're following this man through this time loop. And it's in very interesting sort of thriller mystery kind of thing. There's horror elements at various points because some of the anomalies are really small and hard to catch, but some of the anomalies are super creepy and easy to catch. And so I watched this in Florida with my family or with my extended family while I was down there in March. And we sort of talked at the TV while we were watching the movie, because you can kind of play along with the main character and be like, oh no, you missed the whatever.
Yeah. And they're really bad at it.
Right. Yes. And then we downloaded the game and played the game also, which was a lot of fun. And I was just really impressed by how it adapted this video game to make it a compelling story, but also make the experience of watching the movie very similar to the experience of playing the game. When you think about video game movies, often it's we're creating a whole new narrative and it's just plopping some characters in there. And I thought that this was really interesting in how it was built out and how it actually did have some things to say sort of about Japanese culture. And it made a shit ton of money in Japan. It's one of the biggest live action movies ever to premiere there. It did okay in the US. I found it so compelling and fascinating. And I'm loving this liminal space sort of vibe we've got going on between Backrooms and this. There's also another movie that's coming out later this summer called It Ends that I really like. That's another kind of horror-y liminal space movie. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So I saw this on your recommendation. Okay. I saw it with Rob.
And you were like, no.
I found myself really I don't know. Bored is the wrong word. But it was okay. It's pretty repetitive by, for the sake of its own premise. But it just, the character wasn't working for me. And anytime it becomes this because his whole issue is does he want to be a father or not? And his girlfriend got pregnant. And so then he's haunted by the future and the past of fatherhood. And I'm okay, I'm glad you're going through this journey, but let's all chill out. Remember there's options. And I don't know if I really, I couldn't attach to his journey. That's probably a flaw of my own, but I'm judgmental in that capacity. But I do agree that it was well crafted. It just wasn't very fun for me.
Okay. Well, to each their own. What's your number two?
My number two is Obsession.
Okay.
Which I'm guessing is your number one.
Yes.
Cute. So Obsession, we talked about, it's the horror, is now officially the most, what's the record? It broke from Sinners. It stole Sinners' record for most highest grossing independent film. Right?
Yes. Or the highest grossing non-franchise film or something. Let me look it up.
Yeah, original film, independent conveniently made.
Sure. I mean, I think that that is true. Yes.
Yeah. It's obviously, it's still in theaters. It's still racking up the dollars. It's still getting a lot of attention, a lot of people talking about it, a lot of people discussing, you know, how refreshing it is to have an original concept, to have like a little film do so well, because this was made under $1 million.
Yes. So and it passed Sinners to become the highest grossing live action English language original film of the 2020s. Okay, great. But then also it is the highest grossing film with a budget under $1 million ever.
Oh, cute.
So
yeah, I think it, I mean, I'll let you speak to it too, but I just think it was so compelling and all the performances again were really excellent. And unlike something like Backrooms, where it felt really, there was a pretension to Backrooms for me, this felt very much like the director and writer had an idea. And once he was given like a free pass to make it, he like really focused on making like the best possible version of it. And so everyone involved, all the details, I think really were elevated for a film that could have been written off as like, you know, something like Primate, which we saw this year, or these horror films that still make a splash, like Invisible Man or whatever, but kind of fall away as sort of, you know, been there, done that, tropey, cliche. This was just so refreshing and different and interesting and had like a really strong message or character at the center that just like elevated it completely.
Yeah, it's really strange because the concept of this is so simple and straightforward. Like the way that it pitches itself in the trailer is exactly what the movie does. It's not like there's a lot of complications going on. I think that the ending really works really well in its sort of like Romeo and Juliet-esque like twists and how it is constructed. But for most of the movie, you're basically just watching the aftermath of this wish that he makes, and it's not like a bunch of people are making wishes or there's a bunch of twists to things. Like it's really simple and straightforward, but I think because the script is so good and so tight, and because the performances are so good, you don't really need a lot of bells and whistles, which does make me think about things like Primate, where like I think there is a really compelling version of that movie that could be really good. It's sort of just like does certain things poorly and doesn't feel real or grounded. Like I think all four of the characters in this movie feel very real the entire time. Like how they're acting and how they handle this situation makes a lot of sense. And I think that works really well for a movie. Like I'm sort of shocked and continue to be shocked that this has made as much money and has been as popular as it is. Not because it's bad, I mean, because it's obviously a very good movie, but just because like, you know, when you think about independent films that blow up, you think about something like The Blair Witch Project, which is so specific and has like such a interesting like way of doing it. You know, it like invented the found footage thing, it like invented the sort of shaky cam, like it is doing something that really not that other films before it hadn't done, and this isn't really doing anything new. It's just like doing just what it's movie. Doing really well. That's why it's my number one as well.
I know, I feel like it'll be interesting to see. Like, obviously, this movie made a huge impact. I don't think we're hearing the last of it as far as, like, award season and whatnot. But I'm also curious to see what comes next, because it does seem like such lightning in a bottle that it's like, okay, this is the moment to prove, like, can Indy Neverett really, like, was she, like, a one-hit wonder, or is she, like, the next It Girl? And Cory Booker, no, Cory...
Curry Barker.
Also Cory known Booker as Cory Booker.
Thing. I've imagined Cory Booker directing Obsession.
He should try. But yeah, like what he'll be doing next, which we know is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre redo. Yes. And if you can really like salvage something like that compared to having the free reign to like make your own movie that has no weight of like previous IP and fandoms and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm curious to see how it goes, but I think it will be like a defining film for, you know, until the next one, the next English language independent original film. What was the award? The prize? The,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Under $1 million pulls off. So
yes,
here's to mm-hmm. that. Okay, well, now I get to keep talking because I get to say my number one, which I'm a little shocked isn't in your top 10. But Project Hail Mary for me takes the cake because I also, yeah, I am confused because I do feel like you liked this.
You know, I did like Project Hail Mary. I think Project Hail Mary just isn't like my favorite genre.
Yeah, movie, yeah.
Which is weird to say because I love outer space movies. I think it's just a little too, I don't know, like a little too chummy. I sort of don't.
That's, Ryan, who are you? Are you Ryan
Gosling? Isn't my favorite. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like this, the movie is good on paper. Like, I really have nothing bad to say about.
Yeah.
The movie, it just did not stick with me or sort of speak to me in the same way that these movies.
The same way that Hoppers did. That's crazy. Yeah. That's cool.
Like if I had to watch and like Hoppers again or watch Project Hail Mary again, I'd probably choose Hoppers. Like, I don't know. Project Hail Mary is a really good movie, but I really have like no intention of ever seeing it again. I'm sort of like, okay, like great, sure, perfect, like got it.
But that, yeah, okay, that's fine. To each their own. I really love this movie.
My favorite, right?
Yeah. It's not the best.
Like,
yeah.
I think Project Hail Mary as like a technical piece of craft, like, is better than the drama, is better than the moment, is better than Bad Girls. However, I do not like it. Connect to it.
I know, but like Sandra Hüller, like seeing.
Well, yes, and the Sandra Hüller parts, I did like. If we had gotten more of her, if she had been on the spaceship, I probably would have put it higher.
Yeah, no, I really loved this movie. You're right that it is more my genre. I read the book, loved the book. I love Ryan Gosling. I love any film that like tackles, you know, humanity's best and worst qualities and like our selfishness versus heroism and how we decide when to step up and when not to. Like, I think there was so much going on story-wise that I love, but then also, like you mentioned, the technical aspect is just like, this is such an excellent film and it's beautiful and I love the practical puppetry and all of that. And it just felt epic and really moving. And Ryan Gosling is very attractive to me. So that definitely swayed my vote, probably. Uh-huh. But I think it's just like a really fun, heartfelt, beautifully made film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I really have no qualms with that. I think that's a very good number one pick. I also think that of the movies that have come out so far this year, I think that Project Hail Mary and Obsession are going to be the two that we are sort of talking about when we get to award season and stuff. Yeah. Like, I think that those have been the two big narratives of the year so far in film. And, you know, now it's up to all of these fall movies to sort of figure out how they're going to catch up to those two.
Yeah. Well, and The Odyssey.
Well, and The Odyssey, yes. Which, and speaking of that, but that does not come out this weekend. That comes out in two weekends.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is this being in Spider-Man, or is Spider-Man also the same day as
Spider-Man is after?
Oh, after. Okay.
So, actually, let me pull up the calendar list. This weekend. Oh, okay. So, the invite, I guess, released. In New York this past weekend, but goes like wide next week. Mm-hmm. So this upcoming weekend is Moana, the live action version, versus Evil Dead Burn, which I have no intention of seeing, and The Invite. So I feel like we should do an episode on The Invite next week. Okay. Then. Yeah. And then the following week is The Odyssey. Then there's a week where truly nothing is coming out because nobody wants to go against The Odyssey. And then the following weekend is Spider-Man Brand New Day.
Nice.
So
are you gonna see back rooms, everything must go.
What is that?
It's includes 16 minutes of new exclusive content and bonus footage.
Are they putting that back in theaters?
Yeah, it just showed up on my app.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess so. I would go see Backrooms, Everything Must Go. I would go watch another.
You're gonna go, yeah.
I would go watch more footage of that, I guess. Sure.
I think it might be post-credit, so. Wow. Whatever.
Oh, it's 16 minutes of post-credit scenes? Okay,
yeah.
That I'm less intrigued by. There's also a horror movie called Pinocchio Unstrung.
Ew.
Coming out. What
gross.
Does that mean?
Sounds horrifying.
Okay. Well, we will be back next week, I guess, to talk about The Invite, unless Shelby can twist my arm into watching Moana, the live action version, which I know she's excited about.
Unfortunately, every time Penny sees one of those ads on a bus or, you know, yeah, bus stop, she's like, oh, Moana. Let's see Moana. When is Moana?
And you can't convince her to just rewatch the old version of Moana?
I want to, yeah. But we also just are looking for things to do, you know?
And you don't think Penny would like Evil Dead Burn?
I don't think so. I don't know if she's ready for that. But maybe like Young Washington really get her indoctrinated.
Oh, yes. Young Washington, which I think is sort of one of those Republican films. So,
yeah.
Teach him young. Well, Minions and Monsters is out.
Ugh. Yeah. I've never been a Minion girly.
Well, here's the thing. I have not either. But this one is actually, I feel like, sort of interesting because it's like the Minions in like old school Hollywood.
Mm.
Like back in like the sort of like silent
right
era.
But that's not appealing to me as someone who finds the Minions just tangentially annoying as a concept.
Well, you know, yeah.
Okay. I don't need the think pieces from the director about why all the Minions are boys. Like I cannot bring myself to care about the state of the Minions in this country.
That's why I hate the Minions. They're all men.
Yeah.
Man,
I'm proud. Hater. Proud of it.
Terrible. Okay. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Let us know if there were movies that you feel like we should have included on this list. But I feel like
I thought about putting The Bride. I did. I considered it. For the zaniness of it.
I almost put I Love Boosters, which I did. I did like. That was the only thing sort of like on the cusp that we haven't talked about, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
But okay. Well, we'll be back next week. Thanks everyone for listening. Bye.